Hello and welcome to Iris. This is Trevor Brass bringing you the Sioux City Journal for Sunday, December 20th, 2020. Hope you're all having a wonderful day. Here's a quick look at our 5-day forecast. For today, we can expect the weather to be partly sunny and mild with a high of 46 degrees. Winds will be between 7 and 14 miles per hour. Tonight, it'll be partly cloudy, breezy late in the evening, with winds about 10 to 20 miles per hour and a low of 33 degrees. Monday, it'll be mostly sunny, breezy, and mild, with a high of 47 and a low of 23. On Tuesday, it'll be partly sunny, breezy, and mild, with a high of 53 and a low of 28 degrees. On Wednesday, it'll be becoming windier in the morning, with snow, about 1 to 3 inches are expected, winds about 15 to 25 miles per hour, and high of 33 and a low of 11. And then on Thursday, which would be Christmas Eve, it'll be mostly sunny, winds about 7 to 14 miles per hour, high of 29 degrees, and a low of 14. Turning to the front page of today's paper, we actually have a mini editorial from Greg Nooney of Sioux City. And Greg writes, the COVID-19 has dramatically worsened the mental health crisis in Iowa. The $10 million the governor is sending to the state patrol to stop speeders would be better spent on mental health for crisis intervention. Signed, Greg Nooney of Sioux City. Looking to today's front page story, it's part of the Iowa Endures series and kind of little snapshots of how the COVID-19 virus is affecting life in Iowa on a very personal level. And the subheadline for this story says, 24 hours, 9 newsrooms, 3 million Iowans, 1 virus. Hardship and hope in a single day of the pandemic. And this short little story begins, Nurse Connor Ramirez balances a cell phone between her ear and shoulder blade as she maneuvers a patient's bulky bed through Mary Greeley Medical Center's back hallways. 4 colleagues run alongside, toting medical equipment and the patient's belongings as the sun finally begins to peek out from a cloudy morning fog. Elevator G29, Ramirez says over the commotion, dispatching a cleaning crew to disinfect the lift just as soon as they hang up. We're transferring a COVID patient to the ICU. In Des Moines, a music teacher starts his digital lesson, his piano, guitar, recorder, and slide whistle all within reach. In the Quad Cities, a bus driver tells his riders to wear masks to, quote, keep each other safe. All across the Hawkeye State, exercise classes sanitize mats, stages sit barren, restaurants open with tables spread apart, and computers hum in home offices, corporate buildings closed by the pandemic. Iowans are waking up to another day changed by COVID-19. And on this particular day, Tuesday, December 8th, dozens of reporters and photographers from 9 newsrooms across 2 media companies fanned out to chronicle how the coronavirus has altered life in Iowa. But amid the many difficulties and disruptions, this day ushers in flashes of joy, too. Moments where Iowans offer a helping hand or when they band together. Over nearly 24 hours, one truth emerges. Even in the toughest of circumstances, Iowa endures. And we'll now turn to page A7 to follow this Iowa Endures story. And basically the format is that there's a picture and the time and then the city in Iowa where it occurs. So it's kind of like a slice of day in the life kind of journal of photography. So the first one is 3:45 a.m. Hudson, Iowa. And there's a picture depicting workers at a milk line at a dairy plant here in Iowa. And the story says, moose, thrumming machinery, and upbeat country crooners punctuate the pre-dawn darkness as dozens of Hanson's dairy workers move in between the stalls cleaning and milking cows. Besides everyone's matching cow print face masks, not much has changed on this farm, says co-owner Blake Hanson. Quote, as a farmer, dairy farmer especially, life doesn't stop, he says. Cows still need to be milked. But escaping into routine has been a welcome distraction for many of Hanson's workers, some of whom have had family members come down with COVID-19. Quote, everything's almost normal here, says milker Zach Miller, a 22-year-old University of Northern Iowa student. I just come to work and enjoy what I do. Next is 7:20 a.m. here in Sioux City. It's still dark when police officer Jeffrey Dimitri enters headquarters through a back door and beelines to a table of cleaning supplies. rubbing in a squirt of sanitizer before he slips his right hand into a plastic bag and grabs a thermometer. Dimitri must register below 100.4 degrees to clock in, and temperature above that threshold could be a symptom of COVID-19. 98.6, Dimitri says, looks like I'm working today. Wearing a pair of black gloves and wielding disinfectant, Dimitri goes to his idling vehicle where he sanitizes the steering wheel, door handles, and keyboard on his in-vehicle laptop computer. Instead of gathering in the briefing room where officers used to catch up on families of football, he'll soon slide into the driver's seat and log on for a virtual roll call before hitting the streets. The next 7:29 a.m., the sun rises across most of Iowa. 7:53 a.m. in Des Moines. Cars queue up outside Polk County's Test Iowa site. As cases of COVID-19 spike around the country, this facility's line has been known to stretch out of the pothole-filled gravel lot and onto the road. 8 a.m. here in Sioux City. Dividers around slot machines keep Bill Goodman distanced from other players as the Army veteran tries his luck at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Sioux City. Next is 8:19 a.m. in West Burlington. Kyra Gar, 15, plays long tones, that's written out, on her bass clarinet while warming up for a socially distanced rehearsal with about 30 of her West Burlington High School bandmates. Practices take place in the auditorium, a cavernous space for designed for 300 people. Spread out among the rows like morsels in a chocolate chip cookie, each student musician has his or her own music and music stand as the band preps for its upcoming Christmas concert. But the hardest thing about the concert is you never knew from one week to the next if a kid is going to go on quarantine, or if they're going to go virtual, or if they're not even going to be there anymore, says Mark Elevith, the school's band director. 8:21 a.m., rural Scott County, Iowa. Rob Ewalt walks the concrete aisle dividing the hog confinement as his trained eyes flirt over the roughly 1,250 white barrows, or castrated male hogs, squealing in pigs on either side. Besides raising hogs, Ewalt drives a truck to pick up some extra money. Last spring's COVID-19 outbreaks among meatpacking workers uprooted his schedule. When a packing plant closed, Ewalt's routes for hauling hogs would often change on short notice. Quote, you never know where you are going, he says. 9:08 a.m. in Des Moines. Hazmat suit, heavy-duty boots, rubber gloves, gas mask. For Tim Allen, head of the Des Moines Fire Department's daily decontamination team, donning the gear needed to sanitize ambulances just back from COVID-related emergency calls has become second nature. About six or seven times a day, vehicles from across the metro rumble into Station 1 for a deep clean, Allen says. And it's not just his look that's been upgraded. Instead of hoses and bleach, firefighters brandished a sanitizing gun that uses static electricity to bind cleaning solution onto surfaces. Quote, I don't know if this is going to be a forever thing, but it'll probably go on for another 6 months to a year yet, Allen said. 9:27 a.m. in Moline, Illinois. After every hour-long route, Jose Manicura wipes down the driver's seat area of his bus while a contracted custodian sprays and rubs nearly everywhere else. With a wife and two kids, Mankira takes every precaution, including showering as soon as he gets home and quickly throwing his clothes into the laundry. Quote, we offer masks and hand sanitizer to each passenger, Mankira says. Sometimes riders complain about the masks. They come up with every excuse in the books. Quote, but I always tell them that we have to keep each other safe. Next is 9:40 a.m. in Pottawatomie County. Deputy Richard Hyatt sips from his large Nebraska Cornhuskers tumbler as he recounts contracting COVID-19 in September and recovering from its, thankfully, mild symptoms. A jovial, talkative guy who's been with the sheriff's office almost 7 years, Hyatt says it can be hard to communicate effectively while people are wearing masks. Quote, you have to talk a little bit louder and a little bit slower, and they do as well, he says. I hate to have someone repeat themselves, especially a victim, he says. The more they repeat it, the more worked up they get about what happened. 9:45 a.m. in Des Moines. Okay, friends, music teacher Jordan Leckman says as he starts to play his guitar and sing My Bonnie Lies Over the Ocean to his virtual Windsor Elementary School students. Leckman has moved the instruments around his room, including the upright piano, to make sure everything he needs for class is within arm's reach of his desk. Just outside a student's view is a recorder, a slide whistle, a handheld whiteboard, and his microphone, which he has propped up in a coffee cup. Teaching is teaching. You find a way, he says. 9:45 a.m. in Ames. After transporting Thong Senkfong to the intensive care unit and removing the plexiglass box covering her upper body, Mary Greeley's way of ensuring COVID-19 infected droplets don't spread as positive patients are moved throughout the hospital, nurse Julie Slabold gently pulls a blanket over Sang Fromm's legs and feet. Quote, "Are you in any pain, sweetie?" she asks, shouting just a bit over her mask, face shield, and the BiPAP machine pumping oxygen in Sang Fromm's lungs. "Can you squeeze my hand?" she urges as Sang Fromm complies with a light grip. "Good, good," Slabold says. Sang Fromm tested positive for coronavirus just before Thanksgiving, but the virus didn't affect her until almost 2 weeks later, when her daughter brought her to the ER with breathing difficulties. Despite a weekend on heated high-flow oxygen therapy, Sang Fromm's oxygen saturation levels still aren't improving, Dr. Tamim Maihirani explains. "If the team can't get those levels up, the next step is to put Sang Fromm on a ventilator," he says. Quote, "This is the progression of serious COVID," he says. "It's like they are slowly drowning." As Mariani suits up to examine Sang Fromm, a respiratory therapist adjusts the straps on Sang Fromm's oxygen mask, and Siebold rubs her hand, watching the numbers on her monitor. Quote, "It's okay. You're with us now," Siebold says quietly, pausing between each phrase. "It's okay. We're going to help." 10 a.m. from Des Moines. After recess and a snack, Logan Berlian, a second grader at Windsor Elementary, leans into his computer during a virtual lesson to learn about fossils. The room he normally sits in is down the hall, but he moved to a different space to give himself more distance from peers. Outside his room, water fountains are closed, arrows on the floor direct walking traffic. The faint voices of kids, their comments and stories and answers, ring through teachers' computer speakers and drift into the hallways. 11:38 a.m., again in Des Moines. As the morning's heavy fog lifts, a Unity Point Life Point helicopter receives clearance to fly. In the hours they were grounded, nurse Brian Dotz loaded a cooler of human blood into the bay, and pilot Kyle Johnson cleaned and prepared the helicopter, taking advantage of a brief respite from the increase in flights caused by transporting COVID-19 patients. 11:24 a.m., Davenport. The Quad Cities River Bandits baseball franchise announces it's been invited to become an affiliate of the Kansas City Royals. 12:07 p.m. in Mobile. Faith Lambert and D-Run Fredrickson stand ready to pounce, waiting for Woodbury Central students to finish their meals before they swoop in. When all that's left are crusts and empty juice boxes, Lambert, head of the district's maintenance department, and Fredrickson, a custodian, work as a tag team to clean each of the 45 lunch tables. Using a backpack outfit of spray nozzles, Fredrickson applies a concentrated disinfecting solution on the first pass. Lambert finishes up with water on the second. Over a 90-minute lunch period, they clean the school's commons area, traditionally reserved for lunch, plus a second spot in the so-called little gym, added so students can stay at least 6 feet apart. Quote, "We disinfect every time a student leaves a table," says Lambert, beaming with pride over the school's health precautions. Quote, "We've had amazing luck with it," end quote. 1 p.m., Mason City. Coach Todd Sandin stands at the center ice, cracking jokes in his deep Minnesota accent. Players on his North Iowa Bulls junior hockey team gather around him, laughing as they take a knee before practice. Even as the team prepares for upcoming games, Sandin fears that they'll be canceled. The Bulls' biggest rivals weren't allowed to travel recently due to Minnesota's COVID-19 restrictions. Despite the season's pauses, Sandin says the team's cohesion hasn't waned. If anything, it has grown because of the pandemic. Quote, "I think this year we spent more time with our group than we ever have in the past," he says. 1:02 p.m. in Waterloo. In the shadow of a small Christmas tree perched on our windowsill, Blackhawk County contact tracer Susan Wirtjes, 73, listens to a woman talk about her father's death from COVID-19. Offering comfort isn't a formal part of the job, but the small kindness comes naturally for Wirtjes, who lost her own father in recent months. Though he was not a victim of the pandemic, Wirtjes couldn't be with him as he passed and wasn't able to attend his funeral. Working in teams, Wirtjes and her colleagues gathered confidential information about people's whereabouts since contracting the virus in hopes of stopping a major outbreak. Reaching grumpy people or leaving voicemails is the norm, she says. But sometimes, Wirtjes watches her colleagues nodding and engaging in longer conversations, providing desperately needed companionship. Quote, you can tell that the isolation of COVID-19 has gotten to all of us, but especially to the elders who are living alone, Wurja said. They want to stay on the phone forever. 1:35 p.m. in Des Moines. Polk County officials warned that the number of positive cases of COVID-19 could tick up soon, the consequences of Thanksgiving gatherings possibly starting to show. 2 p.m. from Clear Lake. The historic surf ballroom is cold. The heat is turned off. It's dark, too, just as it has been since March. And it's quiet, an especially eerie anomaly for a venue that's hosted live music since the 1940s. Well, we were the first to shut down, and we'll be the last to reopen, says Executive Director Lori Leitz. All employees except Leitz have been furloughed, and she's been doing a bit of everything. Painting, cleaning, running the gift shop, marketing, tending to the website, applying for grants. She'd like to be planning events, but that's difficult. Quote, the reality is that we really can't plan a whole lot because we don't know what our capacity will be, and it's more expensive to announce and put an event on sale and cancel it than to just not do it at all, Leitz said. More than anything, Leitz wants people back, not just her staff, but crowds too. Quote, there's really nothing in the world like live music, and so many people are missing that. 2:47 p.m. in West Burlington. Nursing assistant Kaylee Mitchell ends her shift by taking a COVID-19 test in a negative airflow room in the garage of the Great River Klein Center, a senior living facility. 3 p.m. in Des Moines. A grandfather clock in the great room at the Kavanaugh House, a hospice care facility, strikes the hour. Normally a busy and welcoming space where families struggling with loss can gather, the room is empty, its plush plaid chairs waiting for a time when a grieving loved one once again will be allowed to sit and stay. Quote, the thing here is that we miss when our families are together. They support each other because they're all here for the same thing. Their loved one is dying of a terminal illness, said Rob Paulus, a team leader of the hospice house, owned by Every Step Hospice. Quote, they just don't get that now. Had initially used said because two entries were combined, Rob said this at 2 p.m. and everything else is from 3 p.m. in parentheses. In an office, Annette Nelson, a registered nurse, sits down to complete charting before her shift ends. For 21 years, Nelson has been providing end-of-life care to patients and support to their families as they grapple with imminent loss. But how she helps them grieve has changed in the face of COVID-19. Quote, I miss hugging and that kind of support to patients and families the most, Nelson says. We do a lot of it now just by talking and supporting, but losing that contact is hard for me. Colleague Terry Jensen was so inspired by the hospice care her mother received as she battled cancer that she switched careers, now clocking her 15th year. Quote, hospice is heaven's waiting room, she says. Given the pandemic's restrictions, Jensen tries to spend more time with each of the home's residents. Quote, people get so lonely, she says, you almost become a stand-in for their family. 4:03 p.m. in Johnston. Staff Sergeant Gary Bulford of Bells, Tennessee, and his fellow soldiers discuss a training exercise at the Sustainment Training Center at Camp Dodge. Soldiers from across the country come to the center to study maintenance, logistics, and medical practices. All wear masks. Quote, it's like wearing an armored vest overseas, Major Sterling Montgomery says. You just get used to it. Next, at 4:10 p.m., Davenport. Miguel Chavez and his Kansas-based crew have been laying internet infrastructure in the Quad Cities for a year. Shouting over the duet of jackhammer blasts and a train whistle, Chavez says they are scheduled to spend another 18 months working for Metronet on the banks of the Mississippi. Wearing masks and spreading out don't get in the way of the job, he says, standing over one hole and pointing to another down the street. Quote, we spread our guys out, and I told them they need to wear masks all the time, he says. We know we're a few guys working in South Dakota who... We know there were a few guys in who were working in South Dakota who got the COVID. 4:44 p.m. The sun sets across most of Iowa. 4:50 p.m. Davenport. From scurrying servers to bustling diners, passersby could easily think nothing has changed at Baked Beer and Bread in the village of East Davenport's historic shopping district. But capacity has gone from about 120 to 60, says General Manager Tara Beber, and each one of those socially distanced tables must be sanitized between seatings. The precautions are producing return customers, she says, but business is still down by more than 50%, even during the holiday season. Quote, after 30 years in the bar and restaurant business, including massive bars in Nashville, I thought I could find a solution to every problem presented to me, she says. COVID stopped me in my tracks. Beber loses sleep thinking about the health and livelihood of her employees. Quote, every single day this weighs on me, financially, emotionally, and physically. I feel it, she says. Quote, people say Iowa's open, but if you're doing it right, you're still hurting. 5:29 p.m. The Associated Press, citing an anonymous source, publishes the headline, quote, President-elect Joe Biden's plans to tap former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack to reprise the role of as Agriculture Secretary. 6:49 p.m. in Davenport. Sanitary Suds attendant Emily Honecker sweeps the blue-tiled floor when she spots a woman with an overflowing basket of clothes and no mask. Quote, hey, miss, she nearly yells, trying to get the woman's attention. Miss, it's the usual excuse. The mask is in her car. Quote, not everyone has a washer and dryer, so this is essential, Honecker says. On the weekends, we have to have people wait outside because there's too many people. Students from nearby Palmer College of Chiropractic have been sanitary's bread and butter, Honecker says, but campus closures reduced traffic. Then other COVID-19-related impacts drove business right back up. Quote, the laundromat in downtown Bettendorf closed along with another one, so we're getting their business, she said. Next, 6:50 p.m., Muscatine. Megan Church, assistant manager at the Palms 10 Theater, checks the layout on the wall, which notes where seats have been occupied. Five people attended the last showing. Then she gets to work, sanitizer in hand. Church remembers when cleaning up after a show meant sweeping up dropped popcorn or checking for soda spills. Now each seat must be disinfected. She longs for the days before the pandemic when a big premiere brought throngs of moviegoers, when the theater was a social hub. Quote, you would see crowds of people talking to each other, she said. Even if they didn't know each other, they would chat. Now it's just so quiet because everybody is so spread out. 8:27 p.m. from Iowa City. University of Iowa guard Jordan Bohannon shoots a free throw as the Hawkeyes battle the North Carolina Tar Heels. Although the Big Ten Conference limited fans to just players' families, the stands are full of supporters' images on cardboard cutouts. Iowa's athletic department is selling the cutouts and donating 20% of those profits to the Dance Marathon, an annual fundraiser that benefits the university's children's hospital. Finally, 11:20 p.m. in West Des Moines. Riley Ratkovich, who is enjoying her third feeding, was destined to make a splash, says her mom, Janelle. First, Janelle found out she was pregnant on her wedding anniversary, April 16th, right in the middle of Iowa's initial coronavirus lockdown. Then Riley blew past her due date to arrive on her aunt's birthday. And finally, the littlest Ratkovich made her entrance as the biggest of Janelle's three kids, 9 pounds, 2 ounces, and 21 inches. Quote, it's 2020, of course, so she is going to be the largest out of my three kids, Ratkovich says with a laugh. Des Moines Lincoln High School sweethearts, Ratkovich and her husband, Brad, were the only ones allowed in the room when she gave birth, but they FaceTimed family as soon as they could, proud to show off their new baby girl with her head full of dark hair. Quote, when she's sleeping, she makes a lot of facial expressions, Ratkovich said. When she makes this certain face, she looks just like my husband. Quote, she's already starting to have her own personality. Like so many of us, 2020 has thrown a lot at the Ratkoviches. Janelle Ratkovich has been working from home for Principal Financial since March, and her kids have been learning virtually since spring break. The family moved to a new home in Des Moines in August and decided to get a few new puppies this summer, too. But capping off 2020 with new life has put a fresh spin on the year of the pandemic for the Ratkoviches. So much has gone on this year, from politics to COVID, that people are like, quote, I can't wait for 2020 to be over, she says. But all the crummy stuff has to come with a lot of the good. Quote, and for me, the good will always outweigh the bad. So that kind of concludes the Iowa Endures one-day snapshot that several newspapers across the state of Iowa did, with kind of a photograph, a little story, and a time of the day to kind of give a day in life portrait as different Iowans and different walks of life deal with this. So let's return back to the front page, where we look to Iowa U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley and his future. Headline, age not a factor, - for Grassley. Like a lot of older Americans, U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley is working past the typical retirement age. In just the past two decades, the share of American workforce that is age 55 and above has gone from just 13% to 23% today, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Not only does Grassley illustrate that trend, he's leaving open the possibility that he will try to hang on to his job even longer after his term ends in 2023. Age will be a factor in deciding whether to run again, Grassley said last week. He would be 95 if he completes an eighth term. That would make him the oldest person in the Senate since South Carolina's Strom Thurmond, who turned 100 in 2002 just before retiring. Quote, I mean, I'm 87, and if age is a factor, it would be a factor right now, Grassley said. What's more of a factor is my ability to do the job. As far as he is concerned, that's not in question. Quote, I'm working just as hard now as I did when I was 40 years younger, 40 years ago, said Grassley, who in addition to being one of 100 senators, is also president pro tempore of the Senate and chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. There are several octogenarians currently serving in the Senate, Grassley and California Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein, also 87, are the oldest. Feinstein added fuel to the, quote, how old is too old discussion when she announced she would step down as the ranking Democrat on the Senate Judiciary Committee. But Grassley, who has served on Judiciary since arriving in the Senate in 1981, plans to take another turn as its chairman in 2021 if Republicans retain the Senate majority. Two of their 80-plus colleagues did not seek re-election this year. Tennessee Republican Senator Lamar Alexander recently told the Washington Post that Senate octogenarians face the age question and whether it's time to exit. He told the Post he did not want to, quote, stay too long. Kansas Republican Senator Pat Roberts also cited maturity in his decision. Grassley jokes that as long as he's able to run 2 miles 6 days a week, he's capable of doing the job. Even contracting COVID-19 didn't stop the Butler County farmer from daily runs. According to his office, Grassley ran for 13 straight days during his asymptomatic bout of COVID-19. However, Grassley acknowledges that he won't be able to run forever, either on foot or on the campaign trail. While campaigning for other Republicans back in 2018, Grassley said that he felt he could live to 100. Quote, but that's not real life, he said when asked about his 2022 re-election plans. If anyone had asked 6 years earlier, he wouldn't have hesitated to say he would run for an eighth term. But then he added, quote, why don't you ask me in September of 2021? Because I need to be able to know that I can get through until I'm 95. He doesn't want to serve if he is not healthy enough to do the job both he and Iowans expect, Grassley said, suggesting he's seen colleagues stay in Washington too long. So he plans to make his decision by the middle of 2021. He's being encouraged by Republicans in Iowa and the Senate to run again. Democrats expect that he will run again. Privately, some expect that he will retire after being reelected so his grandson, Iowa House Speaker Pat Grassley, could be appointed to serve until the next general election. That would give the younger Grassley a running start on being elected in 2028. Of course, that scenario depends on a Republican being in the governor's office if Senator Grassley steps down. The elder Grassley has laughed at the suggestion that he's grooming his grandson to succeed him. Quote, you can't groom anybody to run for anything, he said earlier this year, and it would have been inappropriate for him to choose his own successor, he added. So far, Grassley hasn't been giving any sign of letting up. He just announced he's looking forward to his annual meetings in all of Iowa's 99 counties again in 2021. Quote, this annual tradition keeps me in touch with the grassroots of Iowa and allows me to bring their ideas to the policymaking tables in Washington, he said. Quote, besides, he added, I love my work. All right, let's now turn to the local stories on page A2. First one, body found in burned vehicle in Plymouth County from Westfield, Iowa. An unidentified body was discovered Friday night in a vehicle found burned and crashed in a ditch in Plymouth County. According to a press release from the Plymouth County Sheriff's Office, at around 11:16 p.m. Friday, the Plymouth County Communications Center was notified of a fire in a ditch on Highway 12, south of Westfield. Additional callers soon reported there was a vehicle on fire. Emergency responders discovered that there was a person inside the vehicle. Plymouth County Medical Examiner Dr. Sheila Holcomb was contacted, along with the crash investigation team from the Plymouth County Sheriff's Office and the Lamar's Police Department. The driver was found dead inside the vehicle. Due to the intense fire which fully engulfed the vehicle, the individual could not be identified and the vehicle license information was unavailable. Investigators determined that the vehicle was traveling north on Highway 12 when the driver lost control and entered the East Ditch, then struck a tree. The driver was the sole vehicle occupant. The remains have been transported to the Iowa State Medical Examiner's Office in Ankeny. Assisting the scene at the scene was the Iowa State Patrol, Rex Winkel Funeral Home, and Stockton Towing of Lamar's. Next story is Storm Lake won't host overnight Ragbri stop. From Storm Lake, Iowa. The city of Storm Lake has decided against being the host of an overnight Ragbri stop next year due to COVID-19 concerns and because there are few places for riders to stay. According to the notice posted on the city's website, the city received input from a Ragbri advisory board, volunteers, local law enforcement, and local health officials and school officials. The decision was reached that housing part of the ride would not work out in 2021. Storm Lake has been slated to be an overnight stop in the 2020 Ragbri, which was postponed to July 2021 due to the pandemic. The 2020 route was to start in Lamar's. While we were excited to be chosen as an overnight stop for 2020, we are facing hurdles in 2021 that include strain on local essential workers, an uncertain time frame for COVID-19 vaccinations, and uncertainty over continued infection rates from the virus, the city wrote on in its web statement. Quote, additionally, concerns exist with having adequate housing for riders as there is a reluctance to host individuals in private homes or school facilities. A lack of housing is a difficult aspect to manage to ensure success for this event, the statement continued. Quote, further planning needs to start now for the event. The ongoing issues surrounding the pandemic make it impossible to begin that process in a timely manner. Local Ragbri volunteers are continuing to focus their efforts at their respective work locations during this difficult time. Ragbri, shorthand for the Register's annual Great Bicycle Ride Across Iowa, attracts thousands of riders for a multiple day trek across the state. The tradition dates back to 1979 when two Des Moines Register staffers and assorted others rode bicycles across the state, beginning their route that year in Sioux City and ending in Davenport a few days later. Some elements of Ragbri 2021, the route in particular, remain unsettled as the COVID-19 pandemic is still ongoing despite the limited rollout of vaccines this past week. Continuing our local stories, headline, higher ed enrollment drops across Iowa. Subheadline, Iowa community colleges take average 5.8% hit from Iowa City. Enrollment across Iowa's public, private, and community college this fall dropped 4.7% from a year ago, nearly double the 2.5% decline nationally in post-secondary enrollment. Fall 2020 college and university enrollment in Iowa dropped across all sectors, with community colleges taking a 5.8% hit and nonprofit private campuses collectively losing 3% of their total enrollment, according to Iowa College Aid, a state agency charged with making college accessible for all Iowans. Iowa's public universities, that being the University of Iowa, Iowa State University, and the University of Northern Iowa, collectively reported enrollment losses of 4.4% from fall of 2019 to fall of 2020, including their graduate and undergraduate students. Their combined undergrad enrollment fell nearly 5.3%. That was just above the state's total undergraduate enrollment drop of 5.2%. All losses that the Iowa College Aid spokeswoman Elizabeth Keast-Sidrell said aren't surprising, quote, given the economic concerns many families have experienced, as well as uncertainty about whether colleges would offer in-person instruction and campus housing this fall. Additionally, some of the students who initially enrolled hoping for some semblance of collegiate normality and who signed up to live in residence halls withdrew or canceled housing contracts after arriving this fall to find a vastly different campus experience. University of Iowa Housing and Dining reported 219 contract cancellations between August 1st and December 10th, 674 of which were canceled after fall classes started after August 24th. During the same period in 2019, University of Iowa reported only 217 canceled housing contracts, 114 which came after the start of classes. This fall spike at the University of Iowa is likely related, in part, to the hybrid nature of instruction. All right, we will now turn to page A14 for the opinion section of today's Sioux City Journal, where we will hear from Siouxland Voices, letters to the editor. We got four today. So the first one is titled, quote, "Separation of Church and State Unconstitutional." And the letter writer writes, "The liberal left uses the unconstitutional phrase separation of church and state to try to outlaw any reference to Christmas and the birth of Christ in our public lives. Now they believe the government has the right to tell churches to close and not celebrate Christmas. Historically, the separation phrase came about when a king of England declared himself head of the Church of England, as well as the head of government. It was thought that those two jobs should be done by two separate people. Our founding fathers felt freedom of religion was so important it is the first of the Bill of Rights. It says, quote, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Signed, Roger Wilson of Mobile, Iowa." Next letter is titled, "Why Give China a Free Pass on Virus?" And here's what they write. "Why have the Democrats given China a free pass? Over 1 million deaths worldwide, more deaths in the United States than from combat in World War II. No one questions as to why the Chinese felt it necessary to create this virus in their biological weapons labs. No questions on how they allowed this virus to escape. Why are the Democrats not holding the Chinese accountable, or responsible, excuse me? Why have sanctions not been levied against the communist Chinese government? Why has Congress not instituted hearings to learn why over 1 million deaths so far have been caused by Chinese negligence? These are questions that the American public want to know. The citizens of the United States want answers!" Exclamation point. Signed, Mark Solheim of Sioux City. Next one is, "Feenstra should accept presidential election results." According to a story in the Journal on Friday, Congressman Randy Feenstra declines to acknowledge that Joe Biden won the election or that he is the next president. He says that it is because of the number of mail-in ballots this year, in parentheses, perhaps because of fear of contracting COVID-19 in crowded voting areas, question mark, and because there are still lawsuits pending. Numerous lawsuits have been filed, all of which have been dismissed by judges, Democrat and Republican. Presumably, Mr. Feenstra believes that the election results will be overturned in favor of President Trump. In parentheses, why else would he look forward to having forward to lawsuits? But I noticed that while he carefully walks the fence by leaving open the possibility of discarding voters' ballots where he disagrees with the results, he has no problem accepting his own victory. Do those who think there was widespread cheating and fraud, people who demonstrate against the election outcome, Republican congressmen who were or are still silent about the outcome, including Feenstra, Limbaugh, Hannity, KSC, J hosts and callers, etc., honestly believe that the governors, election officials, poll volunteers, investigators who have dismissed allegations of fraud as nonsense, and judges, all groups that included both Republicans and Democrats, all got together to conspire to cheat and throw the election to Joe Biden, while at the same time electing down-ballot Republican candidates? Come on. People in this country can't agree on what time it is, let alone a scheme like that. This sounds like a misinformation campaign by a foreign government aimed at destroying our faith in elections. Signed, Michael Podash of Sioux City. And final letter writer writes, says, privacy concerns about COVID-19 vaccinations. And they write, already concerns arise about what personal information will be gathered slash shared if a person elects to receive a COVID-19 vaccination. Apparently a card is issued with the date, location, and type of injection to keep you with you for proof. Surely our governments will keep a database. I surely hope and pray we don't use the voter registration program as a model. Additionally, I wonder how we plan to monitor, quote, illegal immigrant entries, capture, vaccinate, document, and then release. Come on, man, give me a break. Signed, Keith Pease of Sioux City. All right, since we are about over halfway done, we'll now do the obituaries for this week. First one is Fred Robinson of Hinton, Iowa. Mr. Robinson, 77, passed away on Thursday, December 17th at a Sioux City hospital. Services will be 11 a.m. Tuesday at Trinity Lutheran Church in rural Hinton, Iowa. Burial will be in Trinity Lutheran Cemetery. Visitation with the family present will begin at 5 p.m. Monday with a prayer service at 7 p.m. at the church. Masks and social distancing required for both. Arrangements are with Rex Winkle Funeral Home of Lamars, Iowa. Expressions of sympathy may be expressed to the family through rexwinklefh.com. Next is Marilyn M. Woolridge of Sioux City, 93, died Saturday, December 12th. Cremation rites were recorded and services will be held at a later date. Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Next is Linda Andrus-Young. Miss Andrus-Young, 73, of Sioux City departed this earth on October 15th of natural causes while a resident of Holy Spirit Retirement Home and while in the care of Hospice of Siouxland. Celebration of Life will be held at a later date for all family and friends that knew and loved Linda. You're invited to share your expressions, experiences, or condolences directly to the family by visiting iowacremation.com for find her obituary. Linda's ancestry is linked to the Belinsky family, known to the early homesteaders in Woolworth County, South Dakota. Next is Donald R. Tudehope, that's T-U-D-E-H-O-P-E, of Sioux City. Mr. Tudehope, 86, passed away on December 17th at his residence. Cremation has taken place, and per his wishes, there will be no services at this time. Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel is handling the arrangements. All condolences may be made to meyerbrotherschapels.com. Next is John W. Gales of Kingsley, Iowa. Mr. Gales, 83, passed away on Tuesday, December 15th at a Sioux City hospital. Memorial Mass will be 10:30 a.m. Monday at St. Michael's Catholic Church in Kingsley. Burial will be at a later date. Visitation will be 4 to 7 p.m. today with a 7 p.m. scripture service at Road Funeral Home in Kingsley. Online condolences may be made at roadfh.com. Next is Michael A. Stews of Homer, Nebraska, 53, died Tuesday, December 15th. Abiding by his wishes, cremation has taken place. A celebration of life to be held at a later date. Moore and Becker Hunt Funeral Home. Next is Carolyn May McCunn of Onawa, Iowa, 82, died Thursday, December 17th. Celebration of life will be December 23rd at 10:30 a.m. at Rush Family Chapel in Onawa. Social distancing and mask will be required. A private family burial will be held at a later date. Jordan Cemetery in rural Soldier, Iowa. Visitation will be December 22nd from 5 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. Next is Susan Chandler of Rockwood, Tennessee. Ms. Susan M. Chandler, 58, passed away on Friday, November 27th peacefully at her home. Services and visitation were held on December 1st at Rockwood Church of Christ. Burial will be held on December 2nd in Roan Memorial Gardens in Rockwood. Arrangements were with the Evans Mortuary in Rockwood. Next is Clara Jean Hanline of Onawa, Iowa. Ms. Hanline, 86, passed away on Wednesday, December 16th at Burgess Health Center in Onawa. Services will be 10:30 a.m. at Tuesday at Rush Family Chapel in Onawa with lay servant Anthony Brainbridge officiating. Social distancing measures must be followed due to the COVID-19 restrictions. Masks are required. Burial will follow in Whiting City Cemetery in Whiting, Iowa. Visitation will be 5 to 6 p.m. Monday at Rush Family Chapel in Onawa, Iowa. Arrangements are under the direction of Rush Family Care Service in Onawa. Next is Dwayne Vincent Hupke of Cherokee, Iowa, formerly of Sioux City. Mr. Hupke, 93, died Monday, December 7th. Service will be December 23rd, 11 a.m. at Matter Dei Parish Immaculate Conception Catholic Church. Burial will be at Calvary Cemetery of Sioux City. Visitation with family present will be 1 hour prior to the service. Masks and distancing is requested. Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel was handling the arrangements. Next is Erica C. Helt of South Sioux City. Ms. Helt, 63, died on Monday, December 14th. A celebration of Erica's life will be held at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of Waterbury Funeral Service of Sergeant Bluff. Next is Peggy D. Deaton of Sioux City. Ms. Deaton, 69, passed away on Tuesday, December 15th. Abiding by her wishes, her body has been cremated. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Online condolences may be directed to meyerbrotherschapels.com. Next is Marley Ray Lynn of Sioux City. Ms. Lynn, 67, passed away unexpectedly at home on Friday, December 4th. A memorial service will be held in March when the weather is, hopefully, more accommodating and people will be better able to travel. Next is Richard E. Daly of Jefferson, South Dakota. Richard, or Dick, as he was known, 83, passed away on Thursday, December 17th. After several months of declining health, Richard died peacefully at a Sioux City hospital. There will be no services at this time, with plans of a memorial service at a future date. Cobra Funeral Home of Elk Point has been entrusted with the arrangements. Condolences may be posted online to CobraFuneralHome.com. Next is Gladys Faust of Westfield, Iowa. Ms. Faust, 91, passed away on Monday, December 14th at the Akron Care Center in Akron, Iowa. Private services will be held at a later date. arrangements are with the Rexwinkle Funeral Home of Akron. Expressions of sympathy may be expressed to the family through rexwinklefh.com. Next is Norma Phyllis Damm, DAMME of Sioux City, 89, died Saturday, October 24th. Services will be held in the spring due to COVID. Next is Margaret Demke of Sioux City, 87, died Friday, December 18th, Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. Next is Beverly Smith of North Sioux City, 81, died Wednesday, December 16th. Service will be December 22nd, 11 a.m., Christy Smith Funeral Home, Morningside Chapel. Burial will be at Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation will be December 22nd, 9 to 11 a.m., masks and social distancing required during services. Next is James Patrick Ward, Mr. Jim Ward of 81 at Sioux City, found peace of the Lord on December 16th while spending his last few days surrounded by family and friends. Service will be 10:30 Tuesday at Mater Dei Immaculate Conception Catholic Church. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the service at the church. Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City is assisting with the arrangements. Next is Michael D. Stitzman of Sioux City, 56, passed away on Monday, December 14th at a local hospital. Services will be held at 1 p.m. on Monday at Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel with visitation from 11 a.m. until the time of service at the funeral home. Burial will be at Memorial Park Cemetery. To live stream the funeral service, visit meyerbrotherschapels.com. Next is Dennis R. Wynn of Sioux City, 72, passed away on Tuesday, December 15th at his home. Per Dennis's wish, he will be cremated and a celebration of life will be held at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of Waterbury Funeral Service of Sergeant Bluff. Next is Carol F. Hitchcock of South Sioux City. Miss Hitchcock, 67, passed away on December 19th at a local hospital. Services will be 11 a.m. Tuesday at Salem Lutheran Church in Dakota City. Burial will be in Omaha Valley Cemetery in rural Homer, Nebraska. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Monday at Moore and Becker Hunt Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made to meyerbrotherschapels.com. And finally, Milo G. Johnson of Manhattan, Kansas, formerly of Laurel, Nebraska, 93, died Monday, December 14th. Private family services will be held. Arrangements are with the Jorgensen Mellowin Lundin Funeral Home of Manhattan, Kansas. All right, well, with our final time together, let's do the Dear Abby and the horoscope. So it's kind of a light way to finish off sometimes, which can be an unending series of bad news sometimes, it feels, especially in this year of 2020. So let's go to Dear Abby. Headline: change in dinner party guest list draws an angry response. Dear Abby, I've known my friend Ashley for a lot of years. She is single. Several years ago, I introduced her to another couple, let's call them Smiths. We all have a lot in common and take turns inviting each other for dinner. This group and a couple of other couples are the only people in my social circle I have seen periodically during this pandemic. 2 weeks ago, Ashley invited my husband and me to the Smiths for dinner. 3 days before the dinner, Ashley sent me a text that the Smiths will be bringing another couple and she wanted to be sure it was, quote, it was okay with us. I called her immediately and told her that with the spike in COVID cases, I wasn't comfortable with having a close dinner with a couple who wasn't in my social circle. She said she was sorry, meaning if I didn't like it, my husband and I could stay home. I'm extremely hurt and angry, and I'm losing sleep over this. I feel Ashley should have asked us before, in all capital letters, adding this other couple to our dinner. I feel like sending her a letter saying that no friend should treat another friend like this, that I guess she's not really a friend, and end the relationship. My husband is stopping me from sending such a letter. Am I overreacting? Signed, Angry in Oregon. Abby writes, Dear Angry, yes, you are. You have blown this out of proportion. Be glad you have a husband who advised you as he did. Ashley did the right thing by telling you the guest list for the dinner had grown so you could opt out if you wished. Because she was the host, she was not obligated to ask permission to include the extras. Dear Abby, I'm a truck driver who is on the road for weeks at a time. My girlfriend got a new job and is working every day. On the weekends, she goes out to bars. I feel jealous because I'm working and even when I can get a weekend to be with her, she doesn't want to be intimate. Also, she promises to call me but rarely does. Should I just end it? I've been married twice and thought we would be a couple and marry. I don't know what I should do. Signed, On the Road. Dear On the Road, allow me to steer you in the right direction. You are apart from this woman weeks at a time, and when you do manage to be together, she isn't interested in intimacy. After promising to stay in closer touch with you, she fails to follow through. This should tell you that when you're out of sight, you're not on her mind. Take the hint. In the quote romance, what little there is of it. Then thank your lucky star she isn't your wife and you're not heading to divorce court for a third time. Next, dear Abby, I am a step-grandma whose four-year-old grandson desperately needs a haircut. Is it okay for Santa to get him a gift card for a haircut? Signed, Clean Cut in Florida. Dear Clean Cut, the child's parents may like their son's hair the way it is. If the reason they are leaving it long is financial, a gift card might be appreciated. However, if that's not the case, your gesture would be interpreted as judgmental, and it would not be appreciated. Alright, let's do the horoscopes. For Monday, December 21st, 2020. Keep moving. Refuse to let uncertainty or what others do limit your freedom or stop you from following your heart. Avoid people who try to manipulate you or try to interfere with your plans. Focus on health and personal goals. Be enthusiastic in all things. Sagittarius, someone you live or work with will offer false information. Verify what's expected of you before you jump into action. Make changes that suit your needs. Romance is on the rise. Capricorn, a creative outlet will help you relax. A change of plans will turn out to be better than anticipated. Head in the direction that makes your life easier and less stressful. Aquarius, take your time, think matters through, and avoid making a premature move. Use your intelligence, connections, and skills to help you make better decisions. Push back if someone pressures you. Pisces, leave nothing to chance. How you handle your responsibilities will affect your reputation. Make a point to align yourself with people who share your motives, ethics, and beliefs. Aries, don't make a fuss. Embrace change and turn it into a golden opportunity. A move will turn into a positive learning experience. Act responsibly, do your part, and finish what you start. Romance is on the rise. Taurus, a change can be confusing. Be clear about what you are doing to avoid a misunderstanding. Joint ventures handled with diplomacy will turn out well. Don't offer to pay for someone else's mistake. Gemini, refuse to let anyone dictate what you can do. Use your attributes wisely and strive for perfection. Channel your energy into new beginnings and opportunities that improve your life. Cancer, don't let anger or emotions take control. Embrace change and you'll discover something you are good at and enjoy doing. Keep secrets and passwords to yourself. Leo, look at your options. Take care of responsibilities and leave no room for error. Don't let a change someone makes upset you. Concentrate on your goal and strive for positive results. Virgo, make adjustments at home that will help keep the peace. Be mindful of others and look for a pursuit you can enjoy with a loved one. Offer suggestions that will help solve financial issues. Libra, delve into something that needs to be revised and make the necessary adjustments. Engage in talks that will help you overcome any uncertainty. Stubbornness will not solve problems. And finally, Scorpio, do what's best for you. Don't feel obligated to agree to something. Uncertainty is proof enough that it isn't time to make a move. Assess your situation, use your imagination, and look for solutions. Alrighty, well that brings us to the end of our broadcast. Let's do a quick look at the 5-day forecast recap again. So today we can expect weather to be partly sunny and mild, high of 46. And tonight we'll have a low of 33. It'll be partly cloudy, breezy, and late into the evening. Monday it'll be mostly sunny, breezy, and mild with a high of 47, low of 23. Tuesday it'll be partly sunny, breezy, and mild, high of 53 degrees, low of 28. On Wednesday, we'll get some snow. It'll be becoming windier. We'll get some morning snow. About 1 to 3 inches are expected. North winds, 15 to 25 miles per hour. 33 degrees as a high. 11 degrees as a low. Thursday, which will be Christmas Eve, mostly sunny. A high of 29 degrees and a low of 14. All right. Well, that's the end of the Iris broadcast for the Sioux City Journal for Sunday, December 20th, 2020. I hope you all have a good week. Have a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, whatever your faith tradition dictates. And I hope you have a merry season. Be kind to each other and yourselves. as this can be a stressful time for some and the expectations are high. So just sometimes it's good to just relax and dial down those expectations and just focus on the basics. Until next week, take care.
Your prescription will be ready in just a minute. Hey, Dad, your laundry will be ready in just a minute. Dad, your lunch will be ready in just a minute.
Hey, honey, why don't you take a minute?
When you help care for a loved one, you give them as much time as you can, making sure they're safe and comfortable. But it's just as important that you take some time for yourself. At AARP, we can help with information and useful tips on how you can maintain a healthy life balance, care for your own physical and mental well-being, and manage the challenges of caring for a loved one. Because the better care you take of yourself, the better care you can provide for your loved one.
Thanks, Dad.
Thank you. You're there for them. We're here for you. Find free care guides to support you and your loved one at aarp.org/caregiving. That's aarp.org/caregiving. Public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.